Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code BREADBOX at checkout for 20% off at catholicsingles.com.
Hello, welcome to Know the Faith, Defend the Faith. My name is William Hemsworth, and thank you so much for joining me on this week's episode. My guest at this time is Father Sebastian Walsh. He's come out with a new video series called The Abbot Circle, and he's over at St. Michael's Abbey in Orange County, California, and he's the author of the book, Understanding Marriage and Family, A Catholic Perspective. Father Walsh, I thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me, William.
Oh, pleasure's all mine. So how are things going in Orange County with everything going on?
Oh, it's fine. You know, California is a lot more restrictive than other states as far as the restrictions. And so in that regard, it's a little bit frustrating that the masses inside, the availability of the sacraments they always seem to be kind of under attack or curtailed. Fortunately, it's good weather right now, and most of the parishes have decided we're just going to have outdoor masses. We're going to do outdoor confessions and things like that as a way of just dealing with this. And they didn't do that last time. And I'm glad they finally realized, like, we have to give the sacraments to people. So that's happening. There are a lot of places that aren't having daily mass because of that. But in any case, at least the Sunday masses seem to be available to most of the public. Thanks be to God. So.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad to hear that. Now, as I was preparing for the show, I was sent an article, a mutual friend of mine sent an article from the Wall Street Journal about how marriage rates have plummeted to the lowest point in recorded history.
Amazing.
So it is amazing. What do you think is the cause of that?
Yeah, fundamentally, the cause is people have no idea what marriage is anymore. And they think they're getting married and they're not. They're doing something other than marriage. One of the things I try to point to in my book is that marriage is fundamentally something natural, and if you're a Christian and you believe in Christian revelation, it also has a supernatural dimension. It's a sacrament, right? And it's not something that's just about the individual romantic inclinations of some individual, nor is it about the state creating sort of new forms of family and marriage. Marriages, in the sense that we're talking about, have existed well before any state existed. It's the object of a natural inclination. And unless men and women come together, have children, raise their own children, and stay together while raising their own children, our species eventually dies out. It's necessary for us, for men and women to marry and stay married for the well-being of our species. And that's not something any state has any authority over other than the responsibility to defend and protect and promote authentic marriage. But when you start thinking that marriage is just about the fulfillment of emotional desires, then at that point, you know, it's pretty obvious what's going to happen is that you don't need any sort of a permanent commitment to satisfy your emotional desires. You're just going to go in, you're going to stay together for as long as your desires are satisfied. Why bother with the messy legal proceedings of a divorce when you can just move on to your next partner, when all along it was never about commitment, never about raising children, never about family. It was always about satisfying those emotions and those romantic feelings. Once that's the idea that people have that marriage is for, the purpose of marriage, there's no reason to get married. And so quite naturally, people don't get married because they've got a completely wrong view of what marriage is for and what marriage is.
It's funny you say that, you know, eventually our species will die out if we don't keep doing this, because the birth rate in some of the countries is negative.
Yes, a low replacement level.
Right. And one of the things I like in your book is you separate reason and then, like you said, divine revelation.
Yes.
And approving marriage. What are some ways that we could show it by reason.
Yeah. So the first thing to do is you have to look at the definition of marriage. That's a definition that's been common to all cultures throughout human history. We only have in the last 10 to 15 years have proposed these new definitions of marriage that as I said before, are largely based upon this idea of romantic interest or something like that. But the classic understanding of marriage is a lifelong communion between a man and a woman established by their free consent for the sake of the generation and the education of children. Marriage in that sense, that has as its purpose the generation and education of children, is obviously something which should be lifelong, because if you're going to raise children together, you have to give a moral example to your children throughout their whole life. Even when you're an elderly couple, you're showing your children how to live at the next stage of their life. You're even going to show them how to die well. So it's obvious that marriage is the sort of thing that really needs to be a communion, and it needs to be lifelong, if it's for the sake of a generation of children and the education of children. And it's obvious it has to be between a man and a woman, right? Those things are obvious once you grant that purpose of marriage. Now, marriage, as I've defined it, is natural. That means it's an object of the natural inclination. Let me give you some examples. Eating is the object of a natural inclination because it's an activity right. necessary for the being or the well-being of our nature. If we don't eat, our nature dies. We're not rocks, we're human beings. We need to eat, right? If we don't breathe, we die. If we don't drink, we die. And if we don't reproduce, our species dies off, right? So marriage in that sense of a man and a woman coming together to reproduce, and then we have to raise our own children. If we don't raise our children, no one else will, at least they won't do it well. And therefore, if we have a bunch of abandoned children, that's not gonna work. So obviously, the only way our species continues and continues in a good way is if people get married in the sense that I've defined. Now, the new definition of marriage is a completely different thing. It's really just about romantic interest or emotional satisfaction. It has no relation to the generation of children, has no relation to the upkeep of our species or the benefit of our race. Instead, it's about this emotional fulfillment. And that emotional fulfillment isn't always good for you. You know, the guy who's committing adultery might feel emotionally fulfilled by that. The guy who's taking heroin or drinking alcohol might feel emotionally fulfilled by that. But I'm telling you, that's not necessarily going to be good for children and the next generation. So if you just look at it from the standpoint of what's natural, what's necessary for the well-being of human nature, marriage in the traditional sense is obviously what's necessary for our being and our well-being as human beings. And I always say, just look at it from the perspective of the children, right? When you're talking about like, oh, I'm feeling unsatisfied emotionally in my marriage, or I want to find more emotional satisfaction in my life, that's fine if you're an adult who can go around and do things. But what about the children? What about the victims of the sexual revolution who are always the powerless children who then grow up in this completely a family where relationships that they need are taken away from them? And then they suffer the wounds from that. And then they're even afraid to get married, or they don't even know how to get married anymore. And so, of course, it propagates itself and ends up being very, very harmful for the next generation. Children are always the biggest victims of the sexual revolution, and this is no exception.
What are some things that you think we can do as Catholics to, I guess, help fix that?
Yeah, well, the first thing is we need to have more light. We have to understand marriage. The problem is, most Catholics have adopted unknowingly the new definition of marriage. And a sign of that is that most Catholics have accepted that artificial contraception is something that is to be used in their family life. If you go into marriage thinking like, well, this is really about, you know, sexual and romantic satisfaction, so kids are an undesirable byproduct, or at the very least, kids are something that I just put off indefinitely until I've satisfied my emotional life. When that's your mindset as a Catholic, you've essentially adopted the new view of marriage, which is not something that's actually going to be good for us and good for children. You've adopted a view of marriage that's fundamentally going to lead to the constant breakup of relationships, the constant, you know, increasing of the divorce rate, or even worse, people just never even bothering to get married again. So the first thing is Catholics have to understand what marriage is, okay? One of the things I encounter as a priest is you get these what are called sophisms. They're just bad arguments that people throw out there. And these arguments, they sound convincing, but if you have just a little bit of light, you understand. No, these aren't good arguments. So the classic argument is, how would you like it if you couldn't marry someone you loved, right? That's kind of the classic argument there.
Right.
Well, everyone knows some loves are wrong. No one uses that argument to justify incest. No one uses that argument to justify adultery. You know, how would you like if you couldn't leave your wife for someone that you like better, you know, you have stronger emotions for, or whatever. You know, some loves are wrong, let's face it. So love by itself is not a justification for marriage. That might be your motive, but that's not the purpose of marriage itself. A young man might study medicine for the sake of making money. That might be his motive. It's not the purpose of medicine. God help us if all the doctors were studying medicine for the sake of making money. It'd be business school instead of medicine. And it's the same way about marriage. The motive a lot of people have for getting married is love. That doesn't mean that's a purpose intrinsic to marriage. And we have to realize that and get back to a sane idea of marriage and family, that really it's about family, it's about children, it's about the upbringing of children and putting them in a place where they can be happy and secure and have peaceful relationships. The relationships, not only do that they deserve, but they need in order to flourish as human beings.
Yeah, and one of the things about your book, and at the end of each chapter, you have the objections there, some of the objections that you've heard. And of course, you just covered one with us. What are some other common objections that you've come across as a priest to marriage?
One of the classic objections, and it's kind of understandable, I most people raise this objection, they don't see through it, but it's actually a fairly easy objection to solve. It's this: even Catholics admit that elderly and infertile couples can get married. And therefore, it's impossible for marriage to be for the sake of a generation of children, because obviously those marriages can't produce children, right? And in response to that, I point out, you're conflating two different things. To be unable to do something or to be able to do something is not equal to that it's for the sake of or for that purpose. A blind eye, for example, is for the sake of seeing, even though it's unable to see. Those are perfectly compatible, for the sake of seeing and unable to see. An infertile orange tree is for the sake of bearing oranges, even though it's unable to bear oranges, right? So those two are not incompatible. In fact, even a three-year-old knows when something's broken. And what you mean when something's broken is it's for the purpose of something and it can't do it. Those are perfectly compatible concepts. So what's happening is people are conflating two things. They say elderly couples and infertile couples aren't able to have children, therefore it's not for the sake of having children. And that's just a false deduction, a false conclusion. In fact, it's quite possible that the marriages of elderly and infertile couples are for the sake of a generation of children. A sign of that is they give to each other the exclusive right over one another's bodies for the acts apt to generate children when they get married, right? You're not married as an elderly couple if you decide just to live in the same house and pay rent together. You're married when you have an agreement about sexual activity that's ordered to the begetting of children, even if no children actually come, right? So then the false deduction that same-sex couples are the same is completely unveiled, because it's clear that the elderly and infertile couple, they can still enter into something for the sake of generating children, right? Whereas a same-sex couple can't do that, right? An elderly couple is unable to beget children because they have an impeded natural ability. A same-sex couple doesn't have any ability of any kind, right? And so, it's certainly obvious once you just see the proper distinctions that the marriages of infertile and elderly couples is for the sake of generating children. And that's okay that they can't generate children. It's not that they've done something wrong. It's just nature has let them down. They haven't done something that's not marriage.
And I'm so glad you covered that objection, because I have a Protestant pastor of mine who brings that objection up all the time.
Yeah.
Now, the second part of your book, you cover marriage from the divine revelation standpoint, and you go over it a little bit in the introduction to the series.
Yes.
So within divine revelation, how do we see marriage played out? I know that's a very large question, but
yeah.
What are some key things, I guess?
Yeah. The main thing I want to really communicate in that part of the book is the fact that the principal mysteries of the Catholic faith are essentially linked to the truth about marriage and family. What I found as a priest in interacting with young people especially, but also full-grown adults who have been married for years, they don't see why you can't be a perfectly good Catholic and at the same time reject the church's teachings on marriage and family. They say, after all, you know, those teachings on marriage and family are not essential. They're on the fringes and those can be changed. They have no relation to the essential teachings like the Trinity and the Incarnation and the church. But that's not true. Just look at the mysteries of the Trinity, the Incarnation, the mystery of the church. All of those mysteries are revealed in terms of family relationships. So we talk about God being a father and having an eternally begotten son. Well, guess where we get that language from? We get it from a family. Or we say that the union of Christ and his church, or the union of the divine and the human nature in the Incarnation, is like the relationship between a husband and his wife, right? St. Paul says that. That marriage is a mystery, and it signifies the union of Christ and the church, of the divine and the human. So here we have the fundamental mysteries of the Catholic faith are essentially linked to the mysteries or the truth about marriage and family. So you're going to end up jettisoning the whole truth about the Catholic faith if you reject the teachings on marriage and family. And what's worse is God established marriage precisely and family precisely as a window to those supernatural realities. Imagine growing up without ever having a father. Or growing up where your mom and dad don't relate to one another the way they should in a faithful relationship. That's going to impede your ability to understand God, to understand the Trinity experientially, to understand the union of Christ and his church, the relationship of God to his people. All of those things are going to be seriously impeded and hampered if you end up rejecting marriage and family in its traditional sense.
So would you say it's kind of like a slippery slope? When you reject those, you start rejecting other things eventually?
Yeah, it's really obvious. You know, it's interesting. So here, I'll give you one clear example. 50, 60 years ago, the divorce rate in the United States was something like 1 in 7, 1 in 6 families, right, which is still too high. But nevertheless, and among Catholics, it was practically non-existent. It was an extremely low divorce rate among Catholics 60, 70 years ago. And at the same time, Catholics universally believed that Christ had one church and he was always faithful to that one church, right? Well, what happens now? In the modern world, you have all these Catholics who are from divorced and remarried families where it's like dad has one wife and then he has another wife and then he has another wife. And surprise, surprise, the people from those families also seem to believe that Jesus has lots of churches. You know, that like there's a Catholic church and then there's a Protestant church and then there's a Buddhist and then there's the Hindus. And all of these are just independent ways to salvation. We don't need to be members of the Catholic Church. There's no special relationship between Christ and the Catholic Church. They've rejected the whole idea of the fact that outside the church, there's no salvation, right? That's been rejected by a society which has rejected the fact that a husband has to be faithful to his wife, because they don't think anymore that Christ has been faithful to his church. And the true Catholic Church teaching is, while people who aren't visibly members or outwardly members of the Catholic Church, if they're Hindu or Muslim or whatever, or a Protestant, they can be saved, but only insofar as they're members invisibly of the visible Catholic Church. In other words, all salvation comes through the church. And that doctrine has been widely denied at the same time that the indissolubility of marriage has been widely denied. It's not an accident.
Right. So there's a lot at stake to get it right.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. Father, how about the Abbot's Circle? You want to tell us a little about what the Abbot's Circle is and how that helps your ministry out?
Absolutely. So the Abbot's Circle, it began in some sense by request. There's so many people who know our Abbey, who know our priests, and we have a lot of really good, wonderful priests at our Abbey. And the people that we minister to really appreciated that. And the problem was that you go to one church and hear one of our priests preach, but then you couldn't go and hear the other one. And then you couldn't, you know what I mean? You could just, and nothing was recorded. And so it was just like, we have all these wonderful things that are available, you know, from our Abbey and from the conference of our Abbey. but they weren't recorded. They weren't made available to a wider public. And so people started asking, is there some way we can make, you know, these things available to a wider public? So we thought, okay, let's try and do that. Let's do an online service where people can sign up and they can join the Abbott Circle. And then they have access to all this content and a lot of different things. For example, I recorded about two and a half hours worth of videos on marriage and family as a way of making that accessible to the wider public. And many of our priests have wonderful talks. Some of them are very short little things. Some of them are more long, you know, longer extended versions. A lot of them are printed media where you have the written homilies for our confreres or other reflections or retreat talks and things like that. So it's been really popular and people really appreciate that, especially in a time when it looks like there's a dearth of really helpful Catholic material in a lot of places. I mean, there's a lot of wonderful places and a lot of wonderful resources if you can find them. But this is like putting everything in one place where people can find a lot of helpful things.
Is there a cost for it?
I think that I don't know all the details, but I think okay. It's like you have to commit to some kind of a donation, but there's no actual, like, you have to give this much or something okay. Like that. Or if it is, it's a very nominal fee or something like that. It's very okay. Small, like $5 a month or something. So, and that's really basically, that covers the cost of producing the material, getting, because we have to pay the people to record all the stuff and whatever.
Oh, sure.
And if people want to generate, to give more generous donations, they're free to. And they have been. People have been very generous. And so for us, it's also supporting our other ministries as well. It's a real boon for helping the Abbey to continue its mission.
Great. So what made you decide to put this series together?
Well, I've been teaching for about 5 years to high school students at our Abbey, the senior class, a course on apologetics. And originally, I was just going to do the classic apologetics course. We talk about things like the existence of God and then, you know, the primacy of the Pope and the Eucharist and Our Lady, those sort of things. But what I found was that the kids, all their questions were about marriage and family because they're just being assailed, you know, from all sides, from their friends, from the internet, from the television, from the radio. They're just being assailed on all sides. They could not defend the church's teaching on marriage and family. So I wrote this book and I gave this class. And every single class that has gone through that, they've been so grateful and so appreciative. And they say to me, Father, thank you. That really has saved my faith. And because of that, it had such a good positive effect on the high school students who are really suffering from not knowing how to respond to these problems. I wanted to make it accessible to a wider audience. And so that's why I recorded this video series so that more people could watch that and could have access to the response to the many, many arguments and difficulties that they've encountered in defending the traditional teachings on marriage and family.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for doing that. Absolutely. So I was on the Abbey's website yesterday and I saw all this construction happening. What's going on over there? Seems like some good things happening.
Yeah, so God has really blessed us. We've had so many vocations to our Abbey. And originally we were just going to expand onto our current property. We have 34 acres on our current property. That's enough to build more buildings and whatever. But then we discovered, as we were trying to, you know, lay the plans for building more buildings, we have a slow-moving landslide that's underneath our property.
Oh, no.
And even some of the current buildings that are already built are starting to fall down in certain areas. And we had to, like the high school at one point, we had to knock down part of it and cap it off. And a couple other buildings are moving, you know, slowly moving. You know, our flagpole is going like this, you know. So we realized we couldn't fix it. It's like 200 feet below the surface. We had to find a new property if we're ever going to continue growing. So we found this beautiful property, the Holtz Ranch, which is about 5 miles from the current Abbey. It's about 320 or so acres, so it's a significantly larger property. It's geologically stable land. And so we started this fundraising campaign, just hoping against hope, asking St. Joseph to intercede for us. And by the grace of God, we were able to raise the money to build a whole new Abbey. We have a beautiful church that's scheduled to be done at the end of October, maybe beginning of November. At least in time for Thanksgiving, we can thank God for this new beautiful Abbey and church. And then it has all these other things. We've got a full abbey for us to live in for 85 confreres. That should be enough to fill us up for another 5 or 10 years. Then we'll have to start, I guess, a daughter foundation. I guess that's up to the abbot. And then and then we have a little convent there because we have to move our sisters over, and we've had people to help out with that. We have a cemetery chapel. And one day, God willing, we're hoping to rebuild our high school and to start our high school again. That's, in my mind, that's kind of the biggest sadness of my heart, is that we couldn't keep the current property because the high school's there, and we couldn't afford to build the new property, a whole new high school yet. So that's my hope, is that that'll be the next thing, God willing, okay, if we can, if he wills it, so we can continue one of our very important apostolates, which is education of the young.
Okay. And Father, where can our listeners watch your videos, get your book? Where can they learn more about you?
Okay, so for the videos, you just go to stmichaelsabbey.com, and then the top part, I think, has a little bar that says About Us, and then you go down there, it says The New Abbey, and then there's another one that says About Donations, and you go down there and it says Abbot Circle. So if you just hunt around on that home page for St. Michael's Abbey, you'll be able to find both the videos and then also the pictures, the construction photos of the new abbey. As far as the book, you can find it from the publisher, which is Aruka Press, or you can also go to Amazon. I think it's also on Barnes & Noble. And you can just go there and order. It's called Understanding Marriage and Family, A Catholic Perspective. I have a copy here. I can show you a little picture there. I think that's what it looks like, more or less.
Great.
So in any case... and then you can order it online at Amazon or at the publisher, Aruka Press.
Great. It's a fantastic book. I encourage everyone to check it out. And so much I didn't realize about marriage. Thank you for enlightening us. And it is a fight that we have to fight as Catholics. Father, do you mind before we leave that you give our listeners a blessing?
Absolutely. The Lord be with you and with your spirit. Through the intercession of the Blessed Virgin Mary, your holy guardian angels and patron saints, may the blessing of Almighty God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit come down upon you and remain with you forever. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Father, for your work, and God bless you.
Absolutely. God bless you too.
Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small-batch artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Redbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.